The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Welcome to Fantasy Football Today, Dynasty. It's a late afternoon edition here on Friday. I'm your host, Heath Cummings. Got a couple of guests today, and I don't want to be too long-winded with the introduction because these are guys who I really want to pick their brains about what happened last night in the NFL draft. But they also kind of represent a couple of my favorite things since we started FFT Dynasty. And first, we got Jared Smola at SmolaDS on Twitter. And Jared's somebody that I've talked to on the internet for probably a decade on Twitter. I've enjoyed consuming his content. I've never talked to him in person or even on a podcast. And so Jared, that's one of my favorite things. It happened with JJ a couple of weeks ago as well. So thank you for being here today, Jared.
Oh, thanks for having me. Yeah, I don't make the podcast rounds like some of these other guys do. It's not exactly my forte, but really happy to be on. Just dying to talk through round one and all the impacts here with you guys.
And speaking of the other guys, Davis Maddock is my other guest, and a completely different situation. I was thinking today, I think the first time I talked to you on a show, it might not have been the first, but I kind of created a Fantasy Football Today or radio show on ESPN back more than a decade ago. And I think Sigmund Bloom was my first guest and you were my second guest, or you were my first guest and Bloom was my second guest. But either you guys were the first two episodes. First off, I haven't talked to you in forever, so I'm glad I get to catch up with you. Second off, do you realize how old that makes you that you did something professionally more than a decade ago?
It does. I mean, I realize it more and more every day that that consuming and producing fantasy football content has been my entire adult life. You know, really, like I don't know an experience of being an adult and not thinking of everything through, like you'll know to do it full time, but like every fall you're planning things with your wife, your family, whatever, and you're like, no, I can't do a Sunday in October. You know, right. It is wild.
It absolutely is. And you know, you fit in that Kansas City family of fantasy analysts that is growing. We've got Jacob Gibb that's on the show regularly, a guy from the same town I'm from. So it's always good to talk to, you know, the Midwest nice, even if you're on the wrong side of Missouri. Now, on today's show, we are going to talk about winners and losers from day one. We're going to talk about Michael Penix, Brock Bowers, Michael Mayer, more. We're going to talk about re-ranking the rookie quarterbacks, or do we even need to? We'll play a little win, lose, or draw with landing spots for the wide receivers. But before we do that, I'd like for you guys to kind of tell everyone what you've been working on and where they can find it. Jared, you can start. Davis, just pick up where he leaves off.
Yeah, draftsharks.com for me. I head up our projections there. So I've been neck deep in that stuff since, 8 p.m. last night, trying to update all these rookie projections, update all the veterans, a result of these rookie landing spots. And those 2024 projections feed into our Dynasty projections as well. So all that stuff is updated for now until, you know, what, 3.5 hours from now, there'll be a lot more updating to do.
I am I'm on TV every day. Sports Grid, if you have a smart TV, you get it. I think it's channel 689. If you have DirecTV, I do the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast, and all of my Dynasty rankings and then in-season best ball rankings are available on my Patreon, patreon.com/takecast.
Awesome, awesome stuff. Like I said, I cannot wait to pick these guys' brains. I did want to start, though, Jared. You mentioned like the grind of the last 12 to 18 hours, I guess it is now. And you had a tweet, like, I think it was during the draft. After the draft, so 12-17, the first 8-ish picks of a Superflex Dynasty rookie ranking drafts gained value tonight. So picks 1 through 8 more valuable after the first round than they were the before. And when I first saw that, I read it the wrong way. And I was like, I don't know. There were a couple of landing spots that I don't like. I think I'm maybe lower on Bowers than I was, but it wasn't about the guys who were slotted into that. It was more of a big picture look at just what the value of the pick is now, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, to me, Brock Bowers is the only guy that lost value to me last night. I thought generally it was a good round one for, you know, your first round. I said 8-ish. I'd probably go even higher than that now, you know, 9-10 picks, I think, gained value. I thought, for starters, just draft capital, right? We had 6 quarterbacks go in the first, 12 picks. We ended up having, was it 7 round one wide receivers, which I think was more than we expected. So draft capital alone, I think, was better than expected. And I think most of the landing spots were good for these rookies.
We will have some discussions about that because there were a couple more that I didn't like. So that will be a good point of conversation. We always start our show, and we're already 5 minutes in, so we didn't quite start it today, but 3 questions for our guest. I'll have you both answer. I'll start with Davis, and I'll just kind of go back and forth as far as who gets to answer first. Question number one, amongst the rookies, who was the biggest winner and the biggest loser of day one?
Worthy is the biggest winner because had he been selected by the Panthers, had he been selected by the Saints or the Rams, some of these other teams that were rumored to get him, I think he probably would have been like the 110 in this class, maybe the 111. I think you're going to see him go as early as 105. Probably he'll settle in as the 107. If you're in a league with me, he might be the 105. And biggest loser, it's relative to what I had them ranked at and what I had their expectation was, but it's Drake May. Drake May is a Commander, probably would have been my 103, probably would have been a top 12, 13, 14 quarterback for me in Dynasty. So in Superflex startups, that's like a top 30 guy in startups. And it's just not an ideal landing spot. And McCarthy also, I think, leapfrogged him.
I tweeted that out just a couple of hours ago that like I kind of have a process I go through with numbers and all kinds of stuff to start where I'm going to rank these guys. And then I usually end up putting my thumb on the scale because I like somebody more than whatever my process has gotten to. But I was surprised, like just first look, that JJ McCarthy was my QB3. And so I would agree with May and in New England, I'm a little bit less excited. I know you said you thought Bowers was really the only loser, Jared. Who's your biggest winner?
Yeah, if we're talking who made the biggest jump up my rankings, it's got to be Ricky Pearsall. Mm-hmm. Getting round one draft capital for starters, I didn't expect that. I know there were some folks ahead him as a potential late round one guy. And then, landing in San Francisco, I think sometimes we can make fantasy pretty simple. Like we want to buy players on the 49ers, the Chiefs, and the Dolphins are probably in that mix now just with their coaching staffs. And we'll see. Obviously, Pearsall is in trouble if Debo or Ayuk are not traded, but sure seems to me that
that's a good point.
I think tonight one of those guys is getting dealt. You listen to Shanahan and John Lynch last night, even they were talking about Pearsall's guy that they think is ready to contribute right away in the event of a trade of one of those guys. So Pearsall's a guy I'll probably still be lower than consensus on because I didn't love him as a prospect, but I think he had to climb your rankings based on the draft capital and landing spot.
It will be really hard to keep him. Like if they trade Debo tonight or Ayuk, either one, it's going to be hard to hold back on ranking him as high as everybody else is going to, because like you said, I am not certain how good Brock Purdy is. Like he's obviously deserves to be a starting quarterback in the NFL, but I don't think he's 8.5, 9 yards per attempt good. I have no idea how good they'll make Pearsall. So yeah, that's a good one. I wasn't even one I was really thinking of. So let's talk about the vets now, and I'll stay with you, Jared. The biggest winner and loser amongst the vets for you on day one.
Yeah, I think the biggest winner has to be Daniel Jones, right? I mean, one, the Giants don't take a quarterback, and he's their guy this year. It's obviously a make or break year because he has no guaranteed money beyond this season. And then not only did they not take a quarterback, but they land Malik Nabers, who, you know, to me was not far behind Marvin Harrison as the most talented wide receiver in this draft class. So I'm not going all in on Daniel Jones, but I think he's obviously in a much, much better spot now than he was 24 hours ago.
And you have a veteran loser?
Yeah, I mean, Michael Mayer is the obvious one, so I'll go a bit less obvious with Justin Herbert, who his team passed up Malik Nabers for. Yeah, a really strong tackle that's going to help Justin Herbert, but man, the wide receiver core is shaky. Sure, it looks like that coaching staff wants to run the ball way more than they should. So I think it's kind of tough to be excited about Herbert, at least for 2024 at this point.
I think that's a good one, and another one that I'm not sure I would have thought of. What do you have, Davis, for veteran winners and losers?
Veteran winners, Drake London, Kyle Pitts, and Bijan Robinson. Roma Dunze could have very easily been that pick at pick 8. And we also, I think, learned the Falcons. I mean, I'm not going to try and get into what the Falcons thought, but what we do know for a fact is that they're going to have 17 games of at least borderline capable quarterback play, whether that means Cousins isn't ready to go off the PUP list or whatever. And they, London and Pitts specifically, I mean, they could each have target shares north of 25% this season because the wide receiver depth chart behind them is so thin that I was pretty convinced they were going to take Adunze. And then for my veteran loser, interesting because it all happened in one offseason. Hollywood Brown goes from consensus wide receiver 55-ish, probably couldn't have gotten even a mid-second round rookie pick for him. Zooms all the way up. He's wide receiver 35 in best ball drafts. I saw him traded for a first round pick in several of my leagues, late first or 2025 first. And I think he honestly probably just goes right back down. 1 year, $7 million deal. They drafted a guy who's actually, if you run any sim score on Xavier Worthy, you're going to get Marquise Brown in those sim scores. Right. So pretty obvious what the Chiefs were thinking there.
Yeah, I'm going to we can talk about this a little bit more when we get into Worthy after the break, but I'm not sure what week one, what the snap share for Marquise Brown and Xavier Worthy looks like. And is there ever a time where they both have a really, I guess maybe when Rashee Rice is suspended for 4 games, maybe, but I just wonder if I think that's definitely what they're thinking is these guys can do the same thing. Does that mean that Brown's doing more of them early in the year and Worthy's not, or is Worthy just so good in training camp? It's been, even Rice needed half a season, and that's about as fast as we've seen a wide receiver in the last 10 years pick up Andy Reid's system. So I do think it'll be interesting to see that split between those two guys, but I would agree it's a net negative for Brown, unless you factor in the news that the way they taught the reports I saw about the Rice suspension is it's going to be at least a multi-game suspension. That maybe he's just not going to play as much football as I thought that he was. I was thinking it was going to be 2 to 4 games max. So we'll see how that all shakes out. Question number 3, we'll go back to you first here, Davis. How much does draft capital matter to you in your post-draft rookie rankings? So Jared mentioned we got a lot better draft capital for some guys. And there's also some guys that we thought were going to be drafted in round one that haven't been yet. How much does that factor in for you?
So if there's a sliding scale from Matt Waldman, right? I'm just going to do my rankings and this is how I view these guys to 100%. I basically just list them in order the way they're drafted. I actually probably am a little bit closer to the Waldman side where I will make some real stands. A.D. Mitchell has not been picked yet, but I'm going to have A.D. Mitchell ranked ahead of probably 2, maybe 3 guys who were picked in round one because my conviction is that high. But Pearsall probably would have been someone I'll end up with almost zero in any format, dynasty, redraft, season, whatever. But now I'm just going to have to be forced to consider him because he was a first round pick. So that's kind of where I'm at there.
Pretty much the same, yeah, Jared.
Yeah, I think I'm probably, if I'm on Davis's 1 to 10 scale, I'm probably 4 as far as, closer to rankings than draft capital. Draft capital definitely matters, right? Like, we can think what we want about these players, but what ultimately matters for playing time, especially, is what the teams think of them, right? I think you got to be careful, though, because I don't care if someone goes 35th overall and this other guy goes 43rd overall, right? Like, those minutia as far as draft capital doesn't matter. But for me, when you start to talk about, you know, ranking a third rounder over an early second rounder, I think that's where you can get in trouble and you'll be too married to your pre-draft rankings.
So I want to hit on that, because I think, like, the numbers you gave were both second round picks. When you're talking about that 10 pick difference, though, and it's the difference between pick 30 and pick 40, or pick 25 and pick 35, do you care any more then, or is it still just 10 picks?
No, those picks don't matter to me. The landing spots do, obviously, but that draft capital is not a big enough gap for me to care.
Okay. No, I think that's a good point, because you hear a lot of times, this guy was a first round pick and this guy wasn't taken until the second round. Well, that was 10 picks apart. How much should we really care? I think it's a question people need to consider. Let's take our first break. When we come back, we'll jump right into the Brock Bowers wonderful landing spot with the Las Vegas Raiders.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey everyone, this is Jimmy Conrad, your favorite former U.S. men's national team player and the host of the Call It What You Want podcast, and I'm here to tell you that Vuori is a versatile clothing brand that speaks my language. It's inspired from the coastal California lifestyle, just like me. Its products stand the test of time, just like me. And also just like me, it endeavors to inspire others to live vibrant, healthy lives. Vuori gear is designed to look great in everyday life while also being perfect for any workout activity. I'm currently rocking the men's Sunday performance jogger, and don't let the name deceive you. You can wear these babies any day of the week and in any situation. I'm talking going to the office, running errands, the gym, whatever your heart desires, because Vuori is an investment in your happiness. For our listeners, they are offering 20% off your first purchase. So get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at Vuori.com/sports. That's Vuori.com/sports. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75 and free returns. Again, go to Vuori.com/sports and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.
I do want to address real quick before Brock Bowers, because we normally do this show about 4 or 5 hours earlier than we're doing it right now. The reason we're late is because I've been in Memphis for the last week visiting St. Jude, talking to them about how we can help them raise more money and save more kids' lives. And I did want to take just a second to say thank you. If you're listening to this show, I think there's a pretty high percentage chance you've helped us in that journey over the last 3 years. The people that listen to the Dynasty Show are some of our most committed fans. And so thank you for being a part of that. You've done an incredible amount of good. I got to see it this week. And get ready for August. It's going to be the best one yet. Let's get back into draft coverage. So we saw Brock Bowers to the Raiders. Not the most confusing pick in the first 15 picks, because Michael Penix happened, but still, like, kind of stumped me. I obviously they want to play a lot of two tight end sets, and Brock Bowers is better than Michael Mayer. But did you guys move Bowers down after this landing spot, and how far in the first round? You can start, Jared.
Yeah, he's definitely down for me. I mean, not too much, because again, I do want to lean into the talent profile more so than landing spot. But I mean, it's tough to find something to like about this landing spot, right? Like, who's Vegas's quarterback? There's no long-term answer there.
Well, come on, it's Gardner Minshew, man.
Yeah, we'll see. The coaching staff I don't love, right? I think Antonio Pierce wants to pound the ball. Luke Getsy, not a fan of him. Devonta Adams is there, you know, for a handful more seasons potentially. He's a target hog. So, like, to me, like, Michael Mayer is like the fourth reason to not like the landing spot for Bowers. There's like three bigger reasons. So, but again, I don't want to move him down too much. Like, I thought pre-draft, I thought, you know, Bowers was clearly ahead of like Brian Thomas, Xavier Worthy, any other receivers you want right there. Now to me, he's like in that tier. Like, I wouldn't, you know, in a non tight end premium league, I wouldn't fault you for taking, you know, Xavier Worthy or Brian Thomas ahead of Brock Bowers.
So you're in that maybe 7 through 9 range in a super flex rookie draft. And I thought like there was some debate about McCarthy versus Bowers as well. Now I would definitely rather have McCarthy than Bowers. So I might be just a little bit lower, definitely still in round one. As far as at tight end, Davis, is he a top 5 tight end before he ever plays a game? Is he a top 8 tight end before he ever plays a game? And how does this impact, like the landing spot impact that?
You know, what's so interesting is that dynasty tight end rankings almost exactly mirror redraft tight end rankings right now, because all the old guys other than Kelsey are gone. Right. So it's Mark Andrews, who's 28. And then, you know, McBride, Laporta, it's all mostly young guys. Mm-hmm. I think the issue you would have pumping him all the way up there is Mark Andrews is not at an age where you're expecting the black marble cliff to come that soon. So would you rather have Brock Bowers or Mark Andrews? I mean, I would just definitely rather have Mark Andrews, right? So sight unseen. I know the target share, the average of the target went down last year. There are just whatever. You'd rather have him. So then you're like tight end 5. And I'm like, well, if Kyle Pitts, who is still only 23 years old, rips off 73 catches, 1,100 yards, and 6 touchdowns, you're just going to be like, well, I was an idiot. It's like, I already know Kyle Pitts can at least be on an NFL field and is in a much better offensive situation. But if the market shifts that way, like if the market's like, oh, we'd rather have Evan Ingram, I'm just like, well, I'll just end up with a lot of Bowers. And particularly the spot where I think I'll end up acquiring a ton of him is if the market decides they'd rather have McCarthy and they'd rather have Brian Thomas Jr. than Bowers, I imagine I'll end up with a ton of Bowers, because I would probably have him. I for sure will have him over Brian Thomas, and I probably have him over McCarthy.
Okay. So, Jared, I think like one way that people look at these tight ends historically has been like, if you're drafting a rookie tight end, be prepared to start somebody else for next year and probably for the year after. And we've kind of seen a shift in that mentality, at least. Like Kyle Pitts was a third or fourth round redraft pick as a rookie. It didn't work out, but everybody had the expectations. Last year, we were drafting Dalton Kincaid as a potential starter, and Sam Laporta was in some scoring systems the best tight end in fantasy football for the full season. What's more likely this year? Bowers and Mayer, like the Raiders go super two tight end heavy. They're second and third on the team in targets, and they're both fantasy relevant, or neither is?
I think there's a better chance neither is relevant, because I think the chance that they're both fantasy relevant is close to zero.
What if Davante Adams gets traded? What
is if Davante Adams gets traded, it's a different story. I mean, you could see these guys combine for, you know, 35% of the targets, but with Adams there, that's just not going to happen, and I don't see it. I mean, listen, Jacoby Myers is still there too, and he's a guy who's kind of consistently drawn more targets than we ever expected.
If Bowers can't by week 8 be getting 21% of the targets sharing the field with Jacoby Myers, then it wasn't going to happen anyway. I think that's kind of where I'm at.
Week 8, like, rookie season. So like you're
he was the third. He was the allowed development. This guy led a national championship Georgia team in receiving with 3 other NFL pass catchers on the roster in receiving. As an 18-year-old, like I do, the thing that threw me off about Bowers was the athletic testing. Mm-hmm. I actually thought he was going to fall. I thought he might end up being an eight, like at pick 18, pick 19 or something. And I know, like, LOL, it's the Raiders and everything. Pick 13 is like a huge vote of confidence in him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think if he's able to draw a 21% target share as a rookie sharing the field with Davante Adams, who, you know, is one of the best target earners in NFL
30%.
History. That'd be a really nice rookie year outcome for Bowers. I think he's capable of doing it. I think I projected him for 19% target share in my initial projection, but, you know, 21 is definitely within the range of possibilities.
I think 19's really pretty optimistic. And if he's that kind of guy, then all of a sudden you've got Davante Adams, you've got Brock Bowers as this like elite tight end. And then Jacoby Myers, as you said, is a really good number 2 wide receiver. Davis, am I talking anybody into Gardner Minshew as like a super flex buy right now?
Here's the issue is I actually think AOC probably starts week 1 because he won Pierce all those games to get Pierce his job. The other thing is, not heard anyone mention this, Ryan Tannehill still out there as a free agent right now. Is he going to be a Raider? I don't know. But that, to me, of all the spots now, it's the most obvious spot where you're like, okay, we'll give you 1 year, $11 million, and whichever one of the 3 of you plays the best is going to be our quarterback.
Minshew did get a pretty nice deal, didn't he? Wasn't it like, didn't he get like $15 million guaranteed?
Well,
like, it wasn't
remember
like,
backup quarterbacks. Backup quarterbacks everywhere got all this money this offseason because of the cap spike. It was like every backup quarterback contract signed was really rich.
Yeah,
killing that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you, Davis. That O'Connell's definitely in the mix to start week one, and he probably he's going to play at some point this season, right? Like Gardner Minshew is not going to start all 17 games. I just come back to it too, though. I don't think the passing volume is going to be high here. If you're desperate for a quarterback in Superflex, I think Minshew could help you, but he's not someone I'm like aggressively going after right now.
Let's certainly not aggressively. This would be a see if you can buy cheap if you're a contender. And
I'll tell you this, Heath. Yes. I've been trading third round 2025 third round picks for a quarterback who's not guaranteed a starting job right now, and it's not Gardner Minshew, it's Sam Howell.
Okay. I think I'd rather try to offer the third for Minshew. But I think people also view Minshew as more likely to start this year than they do Hell. So it might, I'm not sure a third round pick's gonna get that done anyway.
Correct.
But no, that's interesting. And those guys are definitely in the same part of the family tree here. Let's move on to the wide receivers. I'll just run through real quick kind of my initial rankings of these guys, and there's an enormous difference for me between the first five and the bottom two, but I'll put them all in the same rankings for now. I think you guys probably agree with that as well. And with landing spots, just for everybody so they can kind of keep up here. So Marvin Harrison on the Cardinals, then Malik Nabers on the Giants, then Roma Dunze on the Bears, then Xavier Worthy on the Chiefs, then Brian Thomas on the Jags, then Ricky Pearsall on the 49ers, then Xavier Leggett. Yes. No, I was just trying to pause to really emphasize that, like, we're not having the same conversation any longer than Xavier Leggett on the Panthers. Jared, did I get them in the right order?
Yeah, more or less. I think to me, Worthy and Brian Thomas are interchangeable. They're kind of back to back for me. I can go either way at this point. And I think to me, there's a not a huge gap, but there's a gap between from Harrison to Nabers and then from Nabers to Adunze. I had Harrison and Nabers pretty close pre-draft, but yeah, Arizona situation, just having a quarterback that I kind of believe in makes Harrison a much safer dynasty pick at this point.
Well, and you say that, and I don't know if you felt this way, Davis, but I agree that Daniel Jones was a winner. They didn't draft a quarterback. If he's healthy enough to play early in the year, like he's going to play a full season as the starter for the Giants. He has the best wide receiver he's ever played with. I still think I felt more negativity towards Nabers with this landing spot than I felt positivity towards Jones.
Daniel Jones had 17 touchdowns in the season he was good. You know, it's like Daniel Jones can kind of, you know, run around and make things happen and convert fourth downs and whatever. But like the offensive line is still bad. Dable, I think, is a good coach, but maybe is not best equipped to just look at a trash fire on offense and get the best out of it. Like, I actually think the Giants have a lot of good players like Wandale, Hyatt, Slayton, Nabers. And if Waller plays, I mean, that is a good rotation of like guys who have very specific skill sets and can win at what they do. I'm not a Daniel Jones guy. I'm really not. And the math that gets you to Nabers being in this spot is like, well, if he's good, he's just going to, I mean, he could have Puka Nacua's targets from last year. I mean, there's just nothing getting it. Like Wandale Robinson is a great player. Like I love him, but he's not stopping him from getting 10 targets a game. It's just not going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah. I have Nabers for more targets this season than Harrison.
Yeah. Totally, totally realistic.
Okay. So yeah, I think that is possible. I do worry that Daniel Jones is going to like, and hopefully like if that happens, they don't win three games at the end of the year to move themselves out of position to draft an elite quarterback next year. Hopefully we have an elite quarterback by the time we get to the draft next year. Those things usually develop, right? So you mentioned like the little gap after Harrison, or a bigger gap maybe now than there was before, a gap after Nabers. And then when you look at Roma Dunze to the Bears, and I think people have kind of debated, this is a great landing spot because he's now locked to Caleb Williams, who's going to be awesome for the next 5 years. And then people in redraft are going to look at it and say, well, that kind of stinks because he's got Keenan Allen and DJ Moore in front of him. And where am I drafting this guy in my rookie draft if I don't think he's going to be someone who's starting for me or a must start guy next year? So is he closer for you to that Thomas and Worthy group, or is he closer for you to Neighbors?
Definitely
closer for me, he's closer to a neighbor. Yeah, Neighbors for sure. I was curious to get your guys' thought on the landing spot, because to me, I kind of had it as neutral. Obviously, the target competition this year is tough. But I mean, Keenan Allen's only signed through this season.
Right.
And he's getting up there.
32. He never finishes the season. I mean, I have the Oklahoma helmet behind me. I've been rooting for Caleb since he was 18. Didn't love that he left with Lincoln Riley, but like, right. I think there's just this vacuum that happens when we come to the NFL draft, where 4 months of not watching these guys play just leads us to go nuts. Caleb is a different tier of quarterbacking prospect. To me, he's a better prospect than Trevor Lawrence was. I think he's the best number one pick at quarterback since Luck, probably, in terms of both how good he was in college and then the landing spot. There's going to be this developmental magic. This is projection that happens where instead of coming in throwing to Adam Thielen and Jonathan Mingo and Hayden Hurst, he's coming in with an offensive line that, when they were all healthy last year, they were actually good. We think of the Bears offensive line as being so bad because the left tackle missed, I think, 7 games, and they were pretty bad in those games. And he's throwing to like maybe the best pass catching group a rookie quarterback has ever had cumulatively. I mean, maybe not like Mahomes came into a great situation with Kelsey and Tyreek and getting to sit a year and everything. But I think by like week 9, we could be like, Adunze might just be the best wide receiver on this team. Like, he might be better than DJ Moore. He might in the second half of the season, he might lead them in PPR points. I think it's totally possible.
That's interesting. And I said the same thing about JSN last year, and that didn't work out. But no, I think it's definitely possible. And I agree that I didn't really factor in the landing spot when I did he got drafted with about the same draft capital as I expected. The team, I'll call it neutral, but I don't think it's like neutral in the every sense. Like, there's both more upside maybe than I thought there was going to be because of the connection to Caleb, and maybe a little bit more risk than I thought there was going to be because of the initial battle for targets. So it's a very interesting landing spot. And let's move into that. We'll call Rome Odunze a draw. We're going to play win, lose, or draw with each landing spot based on our pre-draft expectations. So Marvin Harrison to the Cardinals. This was the expectation, but it wasn't a guarantee. So can we call Marvin Harrison to the Cardinals a win?
Sure.
Yeah, somewhere between a win and a draw.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do think, like, to the point of these picks got more valuable. He is a guy who gets a little bit more valuable after the draft because the risk of the Patriots drafting him is not there anymore. He is in the spot that we were kind of hoping that he would be in. So a positive development is, you guys have Marvin Harrison as a top 5 dynasty wide receiver immediately, or is he a top 6? Is he 6 through 10?
Top 5. For me,
I have him at 7 right now.
I had said 6 before the draft, and I've got him at 5 now. And I think like anywhere between 5 and 8 makes a lot of, maybe you could get him to 4 through 8.
That's what I've got Jefferson, Chase, Lamb in some order, then Harrison.
I would not be surprised at all if we get a month into the season and everyone has him at 4 behind those guys, and maybe even he passes one of them at some point this year. The sky is absolutely the limit, just like it is for Malik Nabers. So Malik Nabers to the Giants. Win, lose, or draw. You can start, Davis.
It's lose because he could have been a Charger, right? It's like obviously being a top 6 pick is not bad, but he could have been a Charger. So lose.
Yep, totally agree. Slight loss, though. Again, I'm not
very slight
too much.
Right. So we've got a win for Harrison, slight loss for Neighbors. We'll give Rome a draw. I think we all know what the answer to this one is, but Xavier Worthy to the Chiefs. Is he the biggest winner, Jared?
Yeah, it's got to be, right? I mean,
yeah.
I think Kansas City, San Francisco were the top 2 landing spots for Xavier Worthy. Kansas City, number 1, I think there's a clear path for him to see a big target share within the next, 2 or 3 years. Kelsey's not going to be around forever, as we've said. Marquise Brown's on a 1-year deal. I still think I'll probably be below market on Worthy. For Dynasty, I think people might get over their skis a little bit. I mean, we've done this a lot of times.
It's me. I'm the one over. I'm the one too. Over my skis. Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
I was just saying, I mean, Worthy's a great prospect. The size thing, I still worry if he's going to be a better real life player. He's going to be an awesome real life player for the Chiefs. Is that necessarily going to translate to fantasy points? I think that's a fair question.
The thing about someone like Worthy is he's pretty landing spot sensitive, because had he gone to one of these teams that does not have a coach with expertise in using guys like that, I mean, he would have been DOA. He would have been LaVisca, you know, just like, it's just like, oh, just, okay, Xavier Worthy, just go play like you are Jonathan Mingo. You're not going to win.
We don't really say LaVisca here anymore. It was too painful. I want to go back to the size thing, Jared, because we talked a little bit before the draft on this show about how, like, if you look at the anatomy of a top 12 wide receiver, or like any of those types of things where we've been trying to measure, like, what does a top 12 dynasty wide receiver or top 24 dynasty wide receiver look like? It's definitely gotten smaller. There's still big guys who do it, but there's now more guys who are, we have questions about their size coming in. Are you getting to where you are less concerned about that than you were maybe 3 or 4 years ago? And do you think it's possible that 3 or 4 years from now, that size just doesn't worry us that much at all?
I'm definitely less concerned, but again, I'm still concerned. I also think this stuff tends to ebb and flow, where in like 4 years, we might be saying, oh, we want these big receivers again, and the smaller receivers are struggling. Like, I don't think it's going to be this consistent lineup for smaller receivers where they just keep getting more and more useful and more valuable in fantasy. So we'll see. I mean, I think if Xavier Worthy hits as a, you know, big time dynasty asset, he's going to be an outlier. We also, I mean, Devonta Smith's the only guy of this, you know, bucket of weight that has gone in the first round of the NFL draft. Mm-hmm. So like Worthy's already an outlier from that standpoint. And then you throw in, you know, the nuts landing spot. He definitely has a better chance of hitting now than he did 24 hours ago.
Absolutely. So Brian Thomas to the Jags. I think another easy one to win. Is he the second biggest winner, Davis?
Brian Thomas Jr.
Yeah.
I actually think this is a loss. Very, ooh, very slight, because he is not going to have any chance as a rookie to dominate targets. Not to say he couldn't increase his dynasty value, but he is not going to have a 20% target share in this offense without someone getting hurt. In fact, I actually could see him being in kind of like a 5-ish target per game role, even if he starts, because Ingram is the safety blanket. Kirk is a 25% target share guy. He has been, regardless of who plays next to him. And I mean, I laugh at this, but Zay Jones is on the roster and is going to play. Like, Zay Jones, like, they have always played Zay Jones regardless of their wide receiver configuration, and they throw to their running back. So I think small loss here for me personally.
And another, like, Gabe Davis doesn't come off the field. He's the Iron Man. He just plays all the snaps. Okay. So a slight loss there. Do you agree, Jared?
Kind of a draw for me. You like that he's tied to Trevor Lawrence, who I still think, I don't think he's ever going to be a top five NFL quarterback, but I think he's going to be a quality above average starter at minimum for a long time. So that's good. Yeah. I mean, Christian Kirk's a nice player. He's not someone that's going to prevent Brian Thomas from developing into the number one receiver for Jacksonville. And I have questions if Thomas will ever be a number one wide receiver. I think it's more likely he's a better version of Gabe Davis, honestly, which is kind of interesting to see how those guys are going to coexist this season. I'm not super excited about Thomas in the short term, but I think longer term, it's a pretty good landing spot, mostly just because he's tied to a pretty, you know, safe quarterback.
I remember there were some rumors before the draft that maybe Pittsburgh was looking at Thomas. And I always thought that would have been kind of terrifying and interesting to see how George Pickens and Brian Thomas Jr. played together in the same offense. Just kind of put Thomas in context relative to Pickens' dynasty value now. You like Thomas more? How much more?
I like Pickens more.
I was going to say the same. Yeah. I mean, okay. I hate Arthur Smith being there, but he's not going to last more than a year or two. I would bet against. So, I like Pickens better as a prospect. I like what he's shown so far.
He just scored 61 points in one game. I'm not tossing that in the garbage.
Right. Okay. So now you add a bonus question here, Jared, with that. And you guys can both just one word answer. More likely to be a coach in 2026, Doug Peterson in his role, Arthur Smith in his role?
Doug
Peterson.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I wonder if Jacksonville misses the playoffs again this year, if that seat gets hot. Like the rate at which Houston passed them when they thought they had the division locked down for the next decade, it could, the seat could get hot.
Trevor was playing with like 16 injuries last year, and it sounds crazy to say, but their wide receiver group is probably better this year than it was last year, even with, like, Ridley just did not play well. Right. Now they add Gabe Davis, they add Brian Thomas, like they might add another guy here in day two or round 4, 5, 6. I think they'll be better this year.
Okay. I like it. That's at least a lukewarm take. Let's talk about Ricky Pearsall. We've already decided like he was one of our big winners at the start. So the situation's a win. So I'm going to add a little bit of imaginary context here. Brandon Ayuk and Deebo Samuel do not get traded. Is it still a win or does it fall to a draw?
I could still be a win long-term, right? Because like, Ayuk and Deebo, they're not going to be able to afford them long-term, even if they're both around for this season. So I think eventually, if Pearsall is not a bust, which again, I still have questions about, I think, you know, he has a good chance to at least be the number two wide receiver for the Niners, you know, 2025 and beyond.
I mean, it's still probably a win because Ayuk won't be on the team in 2025. Like, it just seems like the 49ers don't really have the money, and he doesn't seem all that interested in taking a hometown discount. And Deebo will be 29. So you're looking at, if you take the, even like a 3-year window, you like, if Ricky Pearsall is good, it's still a win, even if he doesn't add value year one.
I'm going to drop to neutral just because, and you could call it the Trey Lance rule or whatever, but a guy that we just don't think, and I don't think if Brandon Ayuk and Deebo Samuel and George Kittle are there, that like there's any chance Ricky Pearsall is going to make a significant impact next year. And that is just such a risk to his profile for an entire calendar month. Like there's really no chance that his value is going to increase in the next year. And there is a chance that he does something that we don't even see, that all of a sudden Kyle Shanahan doesn't like him anymore. Which has happened to a few guys. So hopefully this gets taken care of and we don't have to worry about it. But let's talk about the last one because it is Leggett to the Panthers. Huge win in that he got first round draft capital. I don't that wasn't a given by any means, but I don't know how to feel about the Panthers at all. Their offense, including Bryce Young, seems a bit like a mystery box to me. So, Jared, you can start. Is this a win or just neutral?
I think it's got to be a slight win because of the draft capital, but I am not excited about the landing spot at all. I'm not very confident in Bryce Young. Even Dave Canales, I mean, I know he was good in Tampa last year, but it was 1 year, right? Like, I'm not ready to call him a positive for this offense. And then they also obviously swing the trade for Deontay Johnson, who has, you know, seen strong target shares throughout his career. So the landing spot's nice. He has a shot. I think he's going to kind of probably make Jonathan Mingo irrelevant pretty quickly, or at least Carolina's hoping that Leggett will. But tough to get excited about him in Carolina, like short or long term.
I mean this in the nicest way possible, but I'm not sure that anyone needs to make Jonathan Mingo irrelevant. I think that might have already been taken care of. Do you have like any sort of take on this, Davis, or it's just like, let's wait and see how it works out?
Well, here's the deal. If he can play,
yeah,
it's a win, right? Because if he can play, there's no one stopping. It's the neighbors thing. My issue is,
well, Deontay's there.
Yeah. I mean, Deontay Johnson is really good at proving that getting open is maybe not as important of a skill as we thought. He's like the best wide receiver in the world at getting open and still somehow not leading to successful drives for his team. I don't really know how that math works, but I just don't think he can play. I mean, I just RotoPat had one of the greatest tweets in the history of the draft that, Xavier Leggett's breakout was so late. It's the variable, or it's the equal of Taco Bell's closed already. We don't know what we're gonna eat. I mean, we're talking about a 23-year-old super senior who had like 400 career receiving yards before his final season, at South Carolina. It's like, that is what the exact, that is what a draft bust looks like, right? Is a super athletic guy who runs into some crazy production with a quarterback upgrade. And you're like, oh yeah, it turns out he just beat up on a bunch of teenagers.
I think it's a really good point. I saw somebody else, and you guys probably saw it. So I have a terrible habit of just reading people's tweets without giving them any credit at all, because I've already forgotten who tweeted it. But I think the other Leggett joke was they wanted to get him in round one so they could have the fifth year option, because that's how long it took him for him to break out in college. And they wanted to make sure they had him for the breakout in the NFL. Let's take one more break and let's jump into the quarterbacks. We will kind of talk about whether we need to re-rank them after this.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Taylor Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Taylor Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Taylor Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Taylor Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Taylor Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBS Sports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBS Sports. So start your business journey today with Taylor Brands.
So let's do the same thing with the quarterbacks. We've got Caleb Williams to the Bears. Everybody's number one, always has been. Jaden Daniels, he's not everybody's, actually. I think Pete Briscoe says that Jaden Daniels would be better. Jaden Daniels, number two, he's on the Commanders. I've got J.J. McCarthy as QB3 on the Vikings. Drake May, QB4 on the Patriots. Bo Nix, you know, I thought the Blake Corum joke was going to be the joke on this show that came true, and it was the Bo Nix to Sean Payton in round one. He's QB5 for me, and then Michael Penix to the Falcons with the number 8 pick in the draft. That's much. I thought it might be the 8th pick in round two. My QB6, Davis, I'll ask you this time. Did I get the order right?
I don't know. I can't answer you yet. I'm still doing the gymnastics. May was my second quarterback, even ahead of Daniels, okay. Even knowing the rushing that Daniels was going to add. I think May is just a baller. I see Justin Herbert, you know, 83% Josh Allen, bigger Joe Burrow. Like, I think he's so freaking good. But it's such a bad landing spot. It's like a head coach and an offensive coordinator who are brand new to their jobs, a bad roster. I mean, bad defense, bad special teams, like a guy who just loved to throw the deep ball in college, throwing to DeMario Douglas and Kendrick Bourne and Juju Smith-Schuster and Hunter Henry. Whereas McCarthy, I don't believe in. Guy had no games of 45 or more dropbacks in college. He attempted fewer passes than Caleb Williams completed in college. Like, he's a total, I think JJ McCarthy is almost a black box, like, given how little adversity he faced at Michigan. But his situation, it's probably better than Caleb's, right? Addison, Hawkinson, Justin Jefferson, Aaron Jones, Kevin O'Connell calling the plays. It might be better than Caleb Williams. He might just throw for 3,800 yards and 28 touchdowns as a rookie, like not even playing that well, just because Nick Mullins had 890 yards in two games for them last year. I don't know. I can't answer you yet.
Daniels is clear two for you now, right? You said you had May before,
yes,
ahead of him.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, it has to be two now. Yeah.
And you're still with May at number three. Is that right, Jared?
No, I'm leaning McCarthy at three with you. Yeah. I do think it's close. Don't hold me to that, Jesse. Right. I mean, it's just
for sure.
May was my quarterback three pre-draft, but a pretty decent sized gap between him and McCarthy. Both were real life fantasy. I think the nice thing about May that maybe is still underrated is his rushing upside in the NFL. I think he can be a guy that gives us, 300 to 400 rushing yards per season with, a handful of touchdowns, because he does have that big frame. But man, it's tough. It's, as Davis said, it's tough to imagine a bigger chasm and landing spot between New England.
It's about as big as it gets. Yeah.
Right. So I don't know. That pushes me towards McCarthy. I liked May better as a prospect, but I don't want to lean into my personal quarterback evaluations too much. I'm definitely not an expert in that department. So, you look at the weapons these guys are going to be throwing to, it's kind of tough not to lean towards McCarthy for me.
Well, they're both so young. Like, I think there's some development that's going to happen in the next 3 months, and there's some development that's going to happen in the next 15 months, that first season and then the off season after, when the quarterbacks usually make the leap. And it's just so much easier for me to see McCarthy turn into something better than he was in college, in where he is, with all the positive feedback that he's going to get and all the good training he's going to, versus
he's bowling with the guardrails up.
Yes. And that makes you really confident.
Yeah.
You can't miss. So I do think that he just hit the combination of everything that's going for him. Just, it's not that people will be wrong that had questions about what he did in college. It's just that they aren't going to matter that much because everything went perfect for him. It's not like the conversation's over there in terms of starters, because Bo Nix was taken 12th overall.
This is the biggest wrinkle in Superflex drafts, actually.
I'm not very confident that Sean Payton is going to work out in Denver. I don't like the way that the start of his tenure has gone. I think Russ wasn't as bad, didn't have to be that bad last year if Sean Payton had just tried to do anything to work with his skill set. But he went out and got a guy who just did what he wants quarterbacks to do, just dink and dunk and get up to the line and know where you're supposed to throw it and throw it right there immediately. And Bo Nix can do that. I think this is about as good a situation as could have happened for Bo Nix, isn't it?
I think you nailed it, Heath. I think how you feel about Bo Nix depends on how you feel about Sean Payton. Mm-hmm. If you think he's still this offensive mastermind that, had a huge part of all the success the Saints had, then yeah, I mean, Nix could be, I don't even want to compare Bo Nix to Drew Brees, but
you can compare him to 41-year-old Drew Brees. I think the final stage Drew Brees and 24-year-old Bo Nix are pretty similar, honestly.
Sure. Yeah, and listen, I mean, he's probably going to start week one, if not week one, by the end of September, I think. Marvin Mims, that's another kind of part of this equation, right? Whether you're a Mims fan or not, because if you are, then the weapons, you can say they're okay. I'm not super excited about the weapons, but Nix and Penix are still close for me, though. Like, I think Nix obviously has more short term value. I think the upside is bigger long term for Michael Penix.
Well, yeah, I mean, if he's able to, they're talking about, they might just sit him on the bench for 4 or 5 years. So that wouldn't work out very well. But if somehow he's starting week one of 2026, now I don't know if both Drake London and Kyle Pitts are still there at that point. But so do you view Davis?
Kyle Pitts might be retired then.
Where Bo Nix is the higher floor, Penix is the higher ceiling option, but so, the floor is a lot different. Like, Nix's floor is much higher.
So this is the issue, is Michael Penix, despite running the 4.5 at his 40, I would put his season average rushing attempts, let's even say he started every year of his rookie contract for 5 years, I bet he averages less than 40 rush attempts, maybe 30 rush attempts. They're not going to run him at all. Yeah. His offensive coordinator, who he was with at Indiana and then followed to Washington, watched him just rip his knee up again and again and again. Guy had four season-ending injuries in college. whoever draft there, he is not going to run. I mean, you'd be lucky, I think, to get 100 rushing yards in a season out of him. Bo Nix ran for 38 touchdowns in college, including 14 in 2022, six last year. He, you know, I mean, this guy's not, I don't, he's not Josh Allen, but he's going to give you, I always say, can you give me what Aaron Rodgers used to give me when he was an MVP? Can you give me 400 rushing yards and four touchdowns? That might be the floor for what Nix can do for you as a rusher. So he's going to add some ceiling and some floor with the rushing. He's going to start maybe not week one, probably week one, actually. I mean, what are we going to start? Zach Wilson? He probably starts week one.
Yep.
He's got a really good coach, whereas I definitely cannot say that about what's going on in Atlanta. And I mean, if Cousins is heels and is fine and is good, I mean, they could just win 10 games a year for the next 2 years with Cousins as their quarterback in that division with this. I mean, Michael Penix might not be a starter for 3 or 4 years. Might never. Really, it might just never come to convey that Michael Penix starts games for the Falcons. So, and I have a sense that the market is going to think like that, like Penix is going to go ahead. If Bo Nix is like the 204 in Superflex, I mean, I just might have him in every league because that's just free money. It's picking up a dollar walking down the street.
Yeah. So a big, big win for Bo Nix. And there's going to be people, I expect, by the middle of next season that are citing completion percentage and talking about how Bo Nix has been one of the best rookie quarterbacks, because I think he's going to complete a very high percentage of 3 and 4 yard throws. If they have some guys that can do some things after the catch, it might be all kinds of fun for Sean Payton, at least. I want to get you guys out of here, so we'll be quick on these last two questions. You can even just give me the names if you want. And on the first one, maybe give me the names that won't. But how many of these guys start week one? Jared, go first.
I think, well, obviously, Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels. I think Bo Nix has a better chance to start week one than May or McCarthy. I could see May and McCarthy sitting a game or two. I think by the end of September, though, all five of those guys are going to be starting.
I think the Patriots might go slow on May, actually, because they signed Jacoby Brissett. So Williams and Nix for sure, Daniels for sure. So that's three. I really just think three for week one. And if it's week four, I still might say, well, the Vikings options are not great. So actually probably McCarthy gets in there pretty quick.
But you said it. Like, look at the guys who were producing good passing games last year. Like, they might just piece together. Like, if they want to go slow with McCarthy, but I think you're right. I think May more likely
to go slow. There's also, I forget the connection, but there's like one of the guys on the Vikings coaching staff was Sam Darnold's high school coach. So there's a little bit of not nepotism, but definitely favoritism there. So maybe Darnold does get to play a bit.
And then we'll flip it the other direction. We'll start with Davis. Jared, you can follow. How many of these guys are starting in 2030? 6 years from now.
The first three who went.
Okay.
I'll be more optimistic and say the first four. I just think McCarthy landing where he did with the infrastructure in place. Okay. Oh, sorry, not the first four, not Penix. The first four in terms of talent.
Michael Penix is starting his first game in 2030.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I think
Williams, on his 30th Daniels, birthday
May and McCarthy.
So awesome, guys. I appreciate you guys both, like, just reaching out last night and saying you'd be glad to come on the show. And then, like, it's been an awesome show. Really great information. Let's, Jared, go first. Tell everybody one more time where they can find your work and kind of what you've got coming up in the next week.
Yeah, draftsharks.com. Again, I'm heading up the projections there. We'll be working on those probably like late into Sunday night, trying to get all the rookies projected our dynasty. I'm really excited about our dynasty rankings. We launched this a couple of years ago, but we now have 1, 3, 5, and 10 year projections for all these guys that kind of feed into our dynasty rankings. We take our current year projection, run them through some aging curve stuff we worked on, some retirement rate stuff we worked on that kind of, you know, spits out a final dynasty value for all these guys. So I'm super excited about that.
You guys can you can flip on your TV. You can watch me any day. I'll be on TV right after this, actually, on Sports Grid. You can catch me there in the mornings and in the afternoons. You can listen to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football podcast, or you can get all my rankings and in-season content. I post it all up on my Patreon, patreon.com/takecast.
Again, thank you both very much. Thank you for everybody who was active in the chat today here on YouTube. Thank you for everybody listening to the podcast version later. We will have on the main FFT show more draft analysis after day two, after day three. And then on this program, we will talk to you next Tuesday.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving non-stop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.